than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Ecclesiastes 1, 16 to 18. Honestly, I think Solomon just says, let me tell you first about this wisdom category. In fact, let's bring up that bullet. Where I searched, I started with wisdom. I had more wisdom than anyone. I had divine wisdom given to me so that I could administrate the kingdom. And notice in verse number 16, he says, I had gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me. And then in the end of the verse, he says, the experience of wisdom and knowledge. I think Solomon is trying to communicate to his visitor and to us, and he's saying, listen, I went the gamut. I read all the best authors. I did all my own research, and I looked into every possible inquiry. And let me tell you what I found after doing all that research on wisdom and how beneficial it was. Look at verse 18 again. He says, for in much wisdom is much grief. I did all that work, and I came to realize that even though wisdom is a benefit, it's just a great grief. And don't you understand that? The more you know, the more sorrow you have. Because when you know what's right and you see what's wrong, it does bring a grief to your heart, doesn't it? So the queen, let me tell you, queen, as wonderful as wisdom is, it doesn't satisfy, it does not quench the longing of my spirit for real satisfaction in life, because the more wisdom I got, the more distressed I became. Hold on to that. Well, let's move on. What else does he try? I know this is the second thing, because in verse number 2 at the end he says, behold, this also is vanity. What else does he say is vanity in addition to wisdom? I said in my heart, go to now, verse 1, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. That's our second bullet today. Let me tell you, I tried pleasure. I tried wisdom. That was an empty hole. I'm moving on to pleasure, and I'm going to have a good time. And he mentions in verse number 2, I said of laughter, it's mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I tried out laughter and mirth, or good times. The words indicate a happy-go-lucky pursuit. The jokester is always looking for the next joke. You know, some of you are like that on Sunday. You got to tell me the latest joke you got this week. And that's fine, because I like jokes too. But as soon as the joy fades, as soon as the laughter dies, it's an empty hole. He says about it, it's madness and folly. Verse 3, I sought in mine heart, or I really gave some thought to this, to give myself to wine. This is often a part of partying and good times, is drinking of alcohol. And yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. And frankly, after I tried wine and good jokes and laughter, I still found madness and folly. And when we read madness here, we're not reading or thinking about insanity so much as moral perversion, or doing that which is on the edge, like when you listen to a lot of comedians who can't keep it clean because they're always pushing the edge. That's the idea behind this madness and folly. It's almost moral perversion is what he's after. Even the pursuit of pleasure came up empty. That is, the taste of wine and the jest of fools failed to provide the satisfaction he's looking. Well, what next can a guy do? Wisdom, isn't it? Having a good time, even playing around with folly or moral perversion or stuff that's on the edge wasn't satisfying. Look at verse 4. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. Do you think he's putting the double reference to the personal pronoun in here on purpose? I made me, I made me, I made me. Yeah, he's done it all. Verse 4, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. And I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. We know that Solomon is a great builder. We've already talked, he built the temple named after him. He built the house in the forest of Lebanon to the north as a place of retreat and protection. He's built palaces for his many queens, or his princesses that he's married into, various families. But in addition to that, he's got these public works, these vineyards, these groves, and these water pools that would feed or irrigate all of his trees. Kings throughout history are known for their building projects. In fact, still to this day, some of the kings, we remember them by what has been built or left in their name. And Solomon is no exception to this. He wants to build, and he wants to leave a legacy to his name, and he's tried all that, and you know what? He's about to tell us that too comes up empty. And I'm moving through these quickly because I'm on a journey here. But let's go to the next one. It's in verses 7 and 8, and the verb changes here. In verses 4, 5, and 6, he uses the same verb, I made, I made, I made. In verse 7, he says, I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. I had great possessions, there's the word possessions, of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of provinces. So what he didn't build, he acquired. He bought slaves. Now, you need to understand that while all slavery is in some way demeaning, not all slavery is as demeaning as the African-American slave trade was in our nation's past. It's not the same. But nevertheless, he did have slaves. He did enslave people for his purposes. He did sequester over 30,000 workers to build the Temple of Solomon and others, 20,000 or more to hew timber out of the forests of Lebanon. He did all that, that's a sign of wealth. I had all of these slaves. And on top of that, they multiplied. And then I had sheep and cattle, and they multiplied. And not only that, in the very same chapter, 1 Kings chapter 10, where we read about the Queen of Sheba, who I've already mentioned in this message, it mentions the fact that he and some of his men went with the king of Tyre, or Hiram, on boats. And they went and sailed somewhere to acquire the gold of Ophir, silver, which was almost worthless in Solomon's days because of the pursuit of gold, ivory, apes, and peacocks. And all this wealth is coming. So he has all these possessions. He's done it to the max, man. He's got servants. He's got livestock. He's got silver and gold coming out of his ears. And if that weren't enough, in the last verse, the last phrase of verse number 8, we read, I got me singers, women singers. We could say this was the fine arts. Might as well invest in the Tucson Symphony Orchestra and in the opera and other things. You know, I tried that out too. But let's keep reading. And the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. The phrase musical instruments only appears in the King James Version and the New King James Version because there's a great debate about what the word is here. The word pair here for musical instruments is one of the most debated interpretive matters in the entire book of Ecclesiastes, because the word only appears right here. When a word only appears one place in the Bible, whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament, you can't use cross references to kind of shade light on the meaning when you don't know what the word is. So we have this word, and there's debate about it. There's at least four different interpretations. It's not my point to go through those, but the leading interpretation in the present day is it refers to concubines. And when we're talking about possessions, slaves, and we're talking about silver and gold and sheep and cattle, a man was often measured by the number of wives or the size of his harem if he was a king. And this fits with Solomon. How many wives did he have? 700. And concubines, 300. That's a lot of women to manage. Whether you come to that interpretation of the phrase or not, I think the point is the delights of the sons of men, the point is Solomon tried it all. He went the full gamut. He tried it all out, and he kept coming up empty. In fact, in verse number 9, he says, so I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Now, let me ask you to pause for a moment. Because some of you are still, what Solomon has actually done here is really given us an expose into the secular life or secular thinking. The secular mind says there is something, if I can find it, my niche, my meaning, my purpose, my Olympic gold, my competition, my lifetime achievement award, I will have made it. I will have reached the top. I will be satisfied. And Solomon is saying, you know what? I tried all the mountain peaks, and when I got up, they were all empty valleys. Been everywhere, man. And it's all leaving my soul empty. But lest you just think it's an expose for the pagan visitor to Solomon's kingdom, the truth is, we all struggle with secular thinking, every single person in this room. Because we live in a culture, right, that is constantly telling us, you'll be happy if you buy this. You need a new mattress. That's why you tossed and turned last night. You need a new mattress. And the reason you're not feeling good is because you haven't bought this special tea that's got these special nutrients in it that will just make your life sing. The whole advertising industry is based on the fact that you're without. What you have right now is not enough. And if you will get this, then you will be truly satisfied. And you know what? Because we're bombarded with it on our televisions, on our social media feeds, every store we walk into, and the billboards along the highway, we do believe it sometimes. The reason I'm not happy is because the person I'm married to, or my boss who isn't giving me a raise, or the pain I'm having is because I can't get away on the vacation that I need. And that secular thinking plays into this, so I want you to grab a hold of this as a Christian now. I want you to think through this. Solomon said, I've looked at the good life, the pursuit of wisdom. We might say that's education or knowledge. And there are a lot of people in our culture that believe, you know, getting a PhD, having a chair in a distinguished university, man, that's really arriving. Pursuit of wisdom. Here's the next one, pursuit of pleasure. You know, let's just, you know, forget all this pursuit of money and stuff. I just need to have a good time. Don't make me work. Let the government pay me unemployment so I can make enough to live on. And then I can just stay home and just feed my entertainment appetite. Good times and a bottle of wine. What could be better than that? And Solomon said, no, no, no. I tried it already. Empty hole. All right? How about the pursuit? Next, of public works. This is employment or accomplishments or people working for the Lifetime Achievement Award, all right? People that want to make, they find their satisfaction in accomplishments. And Solomon had plenty of accomplishments. He built great buildings, olive groves, trees, water pools, empty again. Then finally, the pursuit of possessions. The more I make, if I could just add more zeros to my paycheck, if I can amass more fortune, or if I could just be able to buy what I want instead of having to wait. Of course, Americans don't wait anymore. We have credit for that. While I believe Solomon is setting for us the cold, hard truth, it's not just about the secular life. I'm trying to get you to see that Christians struggle with thinking these same kind of thoughts. Your significance then is not measured by the size of your paycheck, the neighborhood you live in, the vacations you go on, or the amount of wealth you leave behind. I would venture to say that every person struggles with this in his life, more so at some times than at others. Maybe a young person or two in this room who is really thinking that the way to make it in life is to get out, have a good career, make a lot of money, so I can determine my own future. And Solomon's saying, I've run the gamut. You're not going to be satisfied with any of the things on the screen. Like poor treasure hunters, we keep poking our heads into empty holes, hoping to come up with gold. It's like my kids when they were little. Learning about pirates and digging for buried treasure, dug up my whole backyard looking for buried treasure. You keep digging in the wrong place, you're going to get the same nothing that was there the last time. So if you keep looking for satisfaction, then apart from God, you too are going to come up empty. There's a God-sized hole in the heart of every single person, and you'll never be satisfied until you catch up with Him. There might be someone in this room that doesn't have a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And you can pursue everything you want. You can try every mountain peak. You can look into every hole that you want, and you'll come up unsatisfied unless you find God. And that's what church is about, right? It isn't just about making you feel good. It isn't just about teaching you to love your brother. It is about helping you to find God. You need Jesus Christ. You need His Son in your life, because He alone gives meaning and purpose and life beyond the grave. All right, so what did Solomon find? He made all this search. He tried wisdom, and he tried pleasure, and he tried his public works or his accomplishments, and he tried possessions, and it all ended up failing. So what did he find? Point number two today, what I found, Solomon tells us, he discovered. What did he discover after looking? Well, Solomon sums it all up in verses 10 and 11, which are pivotal verses for the whole chapter. Let's look at those now. He says, "And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." Let me recap. Did you miss it? He's recapping his research for clarification. He said, "I've tried wisdom, empty hole. I've tried pleasure of all kinds, empty hole. I've tried public works and possessions, empty hole." All, he says, was vexation, vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, in other words, when he said all is vanity, we looked at that last time, he was saying everything is nothing, but beyond that, my spirit is distressed by that. Vexation of spirit, I'm distressed, I'm not finding any comfort here. There's nothing, what I was looking for isn't there. So, okay, you're thinking, you know what, Solomon just looked in the wrong places. I know somewhere else to look. I'll find another hole. I'll find another hole, and it will have what I'm looking for in it. And there's some people sitting there thinking that. And some of, maybe a young person here is like, yeah, that's because he wasn't looking where I'm looking. If he was looking where I'm going to be satisfied when I pursue that hole. But look what he says in verse number 12. This is interesting. "I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly." Now look at this rhetorical question. "For what can the man do that cometh after the king?" Or to put it maybe in a more contemporary language, what's the man who comes after me going to find out more than I've already found? He's going to come to the same conclusion. That's what he's saying. Rhetorical question. What man is going to find more than this king has already found? If you did the research, you're going to come to the same conclusion. What is that? 2 points to sum up Solomon's findings. First of all, wisdom can't keep the lights on. Now that might sound a little funny to you, but stay with me. It'll make sense in a moment. All right? We often talk about someone having education, erudition, being able to see. We say that you know something. Yeah, I see what you mean. And we talk about, or we say, the light is on, but nobody's home. We use light as a reference to wisdom or understanding or grasping a concept. And Solomon is saying wisdom really is beneficial because it's like a light. In fact, let me tell you about it. "Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly." It is better than folly, he says, "as far as light excels the darkness." I'd rather walk in the light than in the dark. How many of you would like to walk? You know, it's a lot easier to get your work done in the daytime than it is at night without a light. Yeah, light. So wisdom is better. It's beneficial. So I almost see him kind of leaning over, talking to Gwynne Sheba, something like this. Yeah, wisdom can help you in this life. It provides a lot of light. But there's a weakness to wisdom I need to tell you about so you don't get too enamored with my kingdom or with me. Well, what's that weakness? Let's look on. "The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all." What event do you think is happening to all wise and fool? Let's find out. Verse 15. "Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool." So while wisdom can give you light in this life, wisdom cannot keep the lights on forever. Now, does that make sense? What's he saying? Death catches up with everybody. They put wise guys in the ground and fools too. We all go to the same place. Now, he's not denying the existence of war. We'll see this in chapter number 3. He does believe in eternity. But when we're talking about under the sun, every man dies the same way. Every woman lies in the same grave. Everybody goes back to dust. That's his point. Wisdom can't keep the lights on for forever. There's going to be an end to Solomon's kingdom and also to his wisdom. Wow, that's very sobering. What he's found is, I've looked in all of these holes, and even wisdom, as exalted as that is, it's got a weakness. I can't keep the lights on. The memory of the wise then is no better than the fool, because both will be forgotten when the sun sets. Man, that isn't very encouraging. Let me talk to you about Lute Olson. Some of you read in the news or seen it recently that Lute Olson, legendary basketball coach for the Arizona Wildcats, passed away Thursday a week ago at 85. In fact, he probably would have kept on coaching until his decease had not a stroke caught up with him some years ago, and he was really forced off the court at that point. And then I guess apparently from the article that I read, multiple strokes have caught up with him since, leading to his death just about 9 days ago. He's a fabled legendary coach. I grew up in Pennsylvania, on the opposite side of the continent from Tucson. But I know the name, and I knew the Arizona Wildcats. And if there was a tourney going on, the Wildcats would be in it. For 23 straight years, the Wildcats were in the tourney every single year. You remember those days, some of you native Tucsonians. 4 times they went to the Final Four. 1 time they came back in 1997 with the national title. He is a legend. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame and in the Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame. He is a legendary coach. People that don't even know anything else about Tucson know his name. But he's horizontal today. And one day you and I also will be horizontal somewhere. And while he has achievements to his name, within a generation or two, the only place you're going to be able to find his name is in an encyclopedia or a history book on the sport of basketball. And my name's not likely to do that well. It's going to fade away. Within a generation or so, how many of you know the first names of your great-grandparents? Ooh, some of you do. All right, some of you do, but not many in this room. Because wisdom, no matter how bright or how accomplished or how wealthy you are, it can't keep the lights on forever. Humbling, no matter how big, how wise, how powerful, death takes us all to the same place. And that's why he says in verse number 16, there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. What else did Solomon find? Verses 18 to 23 finish out the chapter. In this section of verses 6, you'll find the word labor or labored 8 times. He's mentioning the work he did and the accomplishments or the wealth he amassed. And Solomon understood better than most that all of his wealth would one day soon be passed on to somebody else who wouldn't appreciate it. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 18. Let's read it. Yea, I had hated all my labor. Look at verse 17. Therefore, he said, I hated life. Verse 18, yea, I hated all my labor. It didn't deliver. It left him unsatisfied, which had taken place under the sun. Because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. Verse 20, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom, knowledge, and in equity. And to a man that hath not labored, therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great vexation. So letter B, wealth must be left to others. Solomon realized the reality of that, and that's a vexing thing. He wanted satisfaction. He searched in all the holes he could find, and he still kept coming up empty. Even all of his wealth that he had amassed great wisdom, and on top of that great wealth, and it too, an empty hole. And Solomon actually had reason to be concerned about what he's talking about, leaving your wealth to a son who won't appreciate it or a daughter who won't appreciate it. There is actually reference from a prophet in 1 Kings chapter 11, or the chapter after the Queen of Sheba visited, in which a prophet warns because of his immorality and his idolatry, going after other gods, that Solomon's kingdom, in the next generation, his son would squander the kingdom. And that's exactly what happened. Let's bring up the next slide. This is Solomon's son, Rehoboam. Solomon reached great heights, the farthest reaches of the Israeli empire or kingdom. And his son squanders and gives 90% of the kingdom away to another man, Jeroboam, because he doesn't know how to rule properly and listen to his elders. So in the wisdom, or in the end, wisdom had failed. And in the end, his wealth would be unappreciated and squandered by his son. What a sickening feeling in the pit of his stomach. Let me wrap this up. Last week we were frustrated. This week we're unsatisfied. Boy, isn't Ecclesiastes a great pickup? I promise you, next week, I'm gonna start showing you where Solomon says you need to look to be satisfied. But first, you know, like a good doctor, he has to tell you what's wrong before he can fix it. And he's doing that with his audience. And this is a problem. So you're searching for satisfaction, but you're looking in the wrong places. I want you to imagine today that you're taking a tour. In fact, I want you to imagine that the Queen of Sheba has just done the gamut. She's come to Jerusalem. She's seen his palace. Solomon's handed it off to a couple nobles who've gone out and showed him the paddocks where all the livestock are kept. And she's seen the groves where the apples are growing, and she's seen the water pools that feed the irrigation to keep those trees alive. And she's just like, wow. And if it's not her, imagine some other kingdom visitor. And they've done the tour, and they've kind of come back, you know, for the last little hurrah before they're sent on their way. You know what I'm talking about. You've done this, right? You've gone on a factory tour, or you've gone to a museum. Maybe you've gone to a farm, even the Shamrock Farms right up here in Stanfield, just on the backside of Casa Grande, the Shamrock Farm. And you've done the tour. And you come back, and usually at the end of the tour, one of our favorites is the Jelly Belly Factory. We did this in Fairfield, California, several times. And you go to the Jelly Belly Factory, and they show you how to make all these wonderful jelly beans, all these fruit flavors, berry, you know, and you have raspberry and blueberry. Is there any other jelly bean besides them? Anyway, so you get all these jelly beans, and you go through, and they show you how they make them, and then how they mix them, and then how they get the colors on, and the flavors, and then how they package them. And you get to the end of the tour, and at the end, the tour guide says, opens up a box of little packs of jelly beans and says, each one can take one home. And I don't know, the 3-4 ounce bags of jelly beans in each person, that's the best part of the tour, in my opinion. I get to go home with the goods. And so I want you to imagine for a moment that Solomon's done this with his kingdom and his wisdom and his wealth. He has really just shown his visitors the royal tour. Now, before you go home, as he's wrapping up the tour, he says, there's something I'd like to give you to consider on your way home. And so that night at the Motel 6 or wherever that company was staying, or on the caravan as they were, you know, loaded up the carriage or the camels to go back to the kingdom, they have in their hand a script. And the script in front of them is the book of Ecclesiastes. And Solomon is saying, listen, don't get the wrong impression. Don't leave here thinking that wisdom will make you better, that wealth is going to make you better, that pleasure is going to satisfy your soul, or that if you can amass more, then you will be great. No, I want to tell you that all of these are like empty holes, and there is something still that you need, and he's going to tell you about it in the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes, so that no royal visitor misses the point. And by the end of the tour, I bet he has their attention. They're like, yeah, what's the most successful man on planet Earth at that time going to have to tell me about how to make life work? And they want to read till the end. And I hope you want to read to the end. Here's the most successful, one of the most successful kings ever, one of the richest, wisest men ever. And he said, listen to me. I'm going to tell you how life really works so that you can get more out of life too. You know what most of us do though? We make a tour like this and we go home and think, man, I wish I had more wisdom. I wish I had more wealth. And we're just almost a little envious, you know, of some other personality in our culture. Somebody, some YouTube personality that's making millions doing nothing. All right? And we just think, if the plate had been served to me a little bit better, then, and Solomon won't let his readers go or his visitors go away thinking that. He gives them something to make sure they don't miss the point. And I hope you won't go away missing the point. If you're looking for satisfaction, don't get sucked into an empty hole. All right, finish up. Here we go. Have I talked too long? Probably. It's a problem, preachers. If you've driven in the eastern part of our state, chances are you've gone by the Morenci Mine. It is the largest open pit mine in the state of Arizona. According to Wikipedia, it still is believed that reserves of copper in that mine are at 3.2 billion tons. It is an amazing copper mine. And right now it ranks as one of the biggest holes in the ground. One of these days, they're going to mine it all out, and it's not going to be any good anymore. Maybe they'll get to the bottom of it. But what Solomon is saying is that I've done all the research, I've done all the mining, I have drilled down, and I've checked out wisdom, and I've checked out wealth and pleasure and possessions. And you know what? I've drained every mine dry, and I'm still not satisfied. Do you wonder sometimes why you read on the news? You read these stories, and I'm just going to give you some of the headlines. You know, in the last decade or so, you know, Tiger Woods is a multi-million dollar personality and golfer. And he has to have multiple affairs with multiple women? What was he thinking? I'll tell you what he was thinking. He kept looking into holes, and it was empty. And he was looking. Why does a person like Bruce Jenner decide, after all of his heroics in the Olympics and his personality as a sports announcer on television, decide that Bruce doesn't work anymore and I'm going to be Caitlyn? Why? Because he chased Olympics and medals and personality and position, and he looked down all those holes and he still felt empty. He wanted something. There's got to be something more. And why did superstars like Elvis Presley, or more recently Michael Jackson in 2009, have to find, with their multiplied millions and pleasures and Neverland, etc., why did they have to find comfort in drugs? Empty holes. Empty holes. The answer is that they were looking for satisfaction. When they didn't, when life didn't deliver it where they hoped to find it, they went mining in another place. Where are you mining? Are you too looking down an empty hole? Father, I pray that you will let the pressure of this message sit down on us, because we're all tempted to look to secular things to satisfy. And God, I pray that you'll help Christians to see that nothing really satisfies apart from you. God, help get us to the end of our emptiness now, so that we don't end up doing what Solomon and so many do, chasing empty holes our whole lives. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed. There's a young person in here who's thinking, you know, if I could just get a job, you know, and make six or seven figures, boy, then I'm going to be satisfied in life. Has God touched your heart? Are you looking down an empty hole? But there might be an adult in this room who has been dabbling in practices that you know God wouldn't be pleased with, because you're not satisfied and you're looking for a little bit of thrill or excitement in another place that you know God would not be pleased. You're looking down an empty hole. Has God touched your heart? Would you talk to him about it? Maybe you're thinking, you know, if I can just get this degree, then, or I can just get this title, then I'll get prestige and people will respect me, and that's when I'll feel satisfied. And you're looking down an empty hole. Would you respond to God right now and just say, God, forgive me for getting sucked into believing that these other things will satisfy me? Maybe there's a person in the room that's made a life of this. You retired early. You made a lot of money. You've pretty much been living your own schedule. And boy, what could be better than that? But you're at a point in your life where you realize, well, you don't mind the schedule, being able to set the agenda. You realize it's an empty hole, and I want to tell you there is something more. God would like to have a relationship with you. And He is the only one who can ultimately satisfy the longings in our heart. Nothing on this earth will. Would you come to God? You say, well, I don't know how to do that. Well, that's great. You're in a great place because there are people here who can help you to see how God will forgive all your sins, give you a relationship, a love standing with Him that lasts forever. If you need Jesus, we're here to help you. Would you respond just now? Let's have the pianist play through his stanza. I'm going to ask each Christian to pray. Ask God to demonstrate or show where there's secular desires for satisfaction in your own heart. Would you ask Him by the Spirit to reveal that? Maybe you're here and you're not sure that you're a Christian. You're not sure Jesus has delivered you from your sins and will take you to heaven. Are you concerned about it? You would say, Pastor Mike, that's my need. I'm not even certain I'm part of the family of God. I might be satisfied in life, but I'm not sure I'd be satisfied in death. Pastor, pray for me. I'm concerned about my soul. Here's my hand. Anyone like that anymore today? Oh, God. Accomplish your purpose in each heart. Help us to see that the things we think will satisfy won't. And give us a hunger for the things that will. Do pray for your blessing now. In each life, that we might grow through this and not be tempted to look in wrong places. In Jesus' name, amen. If there's a way I can help you, something I shared in the message or some other need, I hope you'll let me know before you leave today. May God bless and encourage your heart. Let's have our hymn of invitation.